Welcome back to the R.M. Williams Outback Podcast. Great to have you here. This is Terry Cowley. I'm the host of the podcast and also the Senior Associate Editor of R.M. Williams Outback Magazine. We're very grateful to Ram Trucks for sponsoring this podcast. Eileen Breen was supportive but never quite comfortable about the nature of her family's Northern Territory civil, construction and demolition business. The main bugbear was the waste that all went into landfill. That changed in 2020 when Eileen's husband Jerry took a stand to enact far-reaching environmental improvements to turn waste into wealth. The Breen's top-end business, Entex, now recycles a phenomenal 93% of its worksite waste. Eileen is now at the forefront of efforts to create more sustainable businesses across the Northern Territory. Welcome, Eileen.
Oh, welcome, Terry. I'm really glad to be here. Thank you.
Tell me about Entex and what you do there.
Yes, look, traditionally Entex was our family business based around civil construction and demolition, but we've really pivoted that, I guess, on its head to be more around resource recovery and recycling of construction and demolition waste. And we also do a lot of environmentally tricky projects like rehabilitation and remediation of contaminated land, for example.
So since 2020, you've diverted and recycled 71,000 tonnes of concrete and asphalt waste that would otherwise have gone into landfill. And in our story in Outback, you say that equates to more than 22,000 fully loaded Toyota troop carriers lined up end to end along nearly 100 kilometres of the Stuart Highway from Darwin to Adelaide River. That is a really effective visual in trying to explain how much you have really recycled and repurposed.
Look, it is, because when you say 71,000 tonnes of waste, it's really hard for people to visualise what that actually means. So I think all of the listeners could envisage, you know, going on a camping trip with a fully loaded cruiser, and if you line them up end to end, it gives you a much more visual picture of what that would be like. And you can imagine that amount of waste being diverted from our local landfill in Darwin. So it's quite a phenomenal number. I think it's something like up to 30% of the waste that would go on a yearly basis to that landfill facility.
Tell me about your sustainability project, because this is what saw you named the 2023 AgriFutures Northern Territory Rural Woman of the Year. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much. It's been a whirlwind of a year, I can tell you. So the sustainability project really came about from the principles of what we were doing in Entex around doing good for the environment, which we've already talked about, keeping waste out of landfill and repurposing it into a useful product. But it was also around the good we do for our community and society, where we live and work. Doing things like helping young Indigenous youth who've actually maybe gone through the youth justice system to find employment pathways through our business. And we've done that through partnering with Grassroots Action Palmerston, a small Aboriginal corporation that has these youth engagement pathways. And I had a look at what we were doing around the environment, around our community, and I thought, look, they're the principles of sustainability. And those principles could be applied to other businesses of different sizes and other industries to support other businesses to develop their own initiatives that are unique to them and where they're located and the industries they work in. And all those things also help to actually make a more profitable and resilient business. So I thought, well, if we could do it in an industry that's probably one of the most wasteful and destructive on the planet, I could apply those principles and help other businesses to lead the way in sustainability as well.
Definitely a win-win. Now, if we can just wind back a bit, Eileen, tell me about your background, how your parents met and where you grew up, because it wasn't the Territory, was it?
No, it wasn't. I grew up in Melbourne, well, actually between Melbourne and country New South Wales, but my parents were, mum was a young nurse. And actually, she was at school when she first met my dad, but then went into nursing. And my dad was actually a marine engineer. And he sailed between Holland, which is where he's from, and Indonesia and Africa and Australia. And he met my mum at a, I guess it was like an evening run by the Seamen's Mission for sailors that were coming from a long way away, and they would put on a dinner and a dance. And my mum was the hostess there because my grandmother was actually playing the piano and doing all the music, and that's where she met my father, and I guess the rest is history, because about 4 years after that, he emigrated to Australia permanently, and a year after that, I was born and grew up in between Melbourne, country New South Wales, where my parents ended up having a farm and share farming, a horticultural farm there. So we were backwards and forwards between going to school in Melbourne and working on the farm.
So this exposure to life on the land led you to do an applied science degree.
Yes, that's right. I was always fascinated in plants, loved working on the land, and was really interested in just learning more. So I went to the Victorian College of Agriculture and Horticulture. It was their Burnley campus back in the day, and studied a Bachelor of Applied Science in Horticulture. And I ended up specialising in landscape design. So not farming in the end, although I still did a lot of research and development for my parents' farm over the years, but went into landscaping instead.
But you ended up being the head designer for an award-winning pool builder and garden design company in the 1980s.
Yeah, that was pretty exciting. It was a really fun time to work, really interesting, very creative, looking at how we could use all different sorts of plants, a lot of native plants in gardens, and we built swimming pools that won awards from right up in the Snowy Mountain region to all around Victoria. So it was an exciting time. Until we had a recession, and my goodness, you know, the interest rates went up to, I think, 17% at that time. So things like landscaping and pools became not a necessity for people. So it was a really tough time in that particular industry.
I bet. And you also dabbled in the health benefits of essential oils and aromatherapy.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting segue, because during that time where there was literally no work in that industry, I was going backwards and forwards working on my parents' farm. I'd come back to Melbourne to do some landscape design projects as and when they came up. And at the time, my mum actually had and was diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder. And instead of going down the traditional medical route, which would have had really horrible consequences for her health, she decided to go to a naturopath. So to support her, like, our whole family basically changed our diet and how we approached our health. And a lot of that was through plants and looking at how plants help human health. And I came across essential oils during that process and thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I just want to learn more about how these plants work physically on the body, but also emotionally through the sense of smell and how that can trigger lots of really positive mental health benefits as well.
So I have to ask then, what brought you to Darwin?
Oh, okay. So at the time, it was a romantic relationship, and I thought I was madly in love, and followed my boyfriend at the time, a lovely fellow, up to Darwin. And I realised, well, I probably wasn't really madly in love, but I absolutely fell in love with Darwin. And, you know, when I think back, living and working in Melbourne, I actually felt like a bit of a square peg in a round hole. I always felt much more at home on the family farm and in rural communities. And Darwin itself is like a big country town. It's got all the benefits of a city, but it's definitely got a country feel. And this was the place I thought I would spend the rest of my life.
But that wasn't to be, at least not initially. You met your future husband and ended up in, of all places, Northern Ireland.
I know. Look, you couldn't get more different, could you, from 30-plus degree heat in Darwin every day and 99% humidity, going to Northern Ireland where, you know, lots of dark days over the winter and very, very cold. And, yeah, it was a big difference, but an exciting opportunity.
So tell me why you ended up there and what it was like in the 1990s. It wasn't probably the best time for Northern Ireland at that point, was it?
Well, no, it wasn't. And it was a really confronting move, which neither of us had expected, because Northern Ireland was coming to a really difficult end of what is known as the Northern Irish Troubles. And a Good Friday Agreement had been signed so that the differing parties would come to a good agreement to move forward and a peaceful agreement. But 6 weeks before we were due to move out, I literally sold my business. I packed up all my belongings. They were on a ship on the way over to Northern Ireland. And probably the biggest bomb in the history of the Northern Irish Troubles went off in the little town that we were actually moving to. So it was incredibly confronting to arrive in a community, because I was already committed, I couldn't change my mind by then, but arrive in a community that was really traumatised. 31 people, that's including two unborn twins, were killed in that bomb. And literally everyone I met knew somebody who'd either died or been severely injured in that explosion. So never having experienced anything like terrorism, particularly at that time in Australia, it was a very confronting move. We were there about 18 months before our first son, John, was born there. But, you know, out of a really dark situation, a lot of very good things came out of that particular bomb. And it actually brought differing sides together in a way that hadn't happened before. Pretty tragic. It took something like that to actually get much more long-lasting peace, but it ended up being a really wonderful place to start our young family.
It wasn't the Troubles that led to you thinking about coming back to Australia. It was the 2008 global financial crisis.
Yeah, I feel like I've jumped from, one recession to another financial crisis, and my goodness, it was. We actually had a really thriving business in Northern Ireland, and it was a lot of civil construction like what we do now, but we actually also did construction, and we're not builders, but we're really good organisers, and we were building a really large housing development in the Republic of Ireland, so Southern Ireland, and it was 110 houses. We'd handed over our first 30 houses to the property developer, and we'd already started on the next 30. And it was almost like a switch went off overnight and the bank stopped lending. It's something I don't think we really experienced anywhere near the same degree in Australia, but Ireland was absolutely decimated by that. And the entire construction industry just fell in a heap. So the developer couldn't pay us for the work that we'd done. And, we got to a point where, we had to, our business folded, which was a really tough time. And, there wasn't a lot of opportunity there what else are we going to do? Are we going to get a job? We're going to be poor for a while. Or we could be poor and cold. Or as I suggested to my husband, Jerry, we could be poor and warm and come back to Darwin. And we already knew there was so much opportunity here. We'd be able to get jobs straight away, which we did as soon as we arrived, and we had a lot of family support back in Darwin as well.
I definitely would choose the poor and warm option, Eileen. So you came back to a series of interesting jobs, various sectors, but in 2020, Jerry coaxed you to join the company he was running or working for. What would be the correct way to say that?
Well, we started off actually founding that business together, and that's Entex. And I stepped aside from the business for a while because, no business journey that I know of, or very few, is that lovely upward trajectory where you've got regular, consistent income coming in. And I'm sure, any of your listeners that are farmers or have businesses will fully relate to that. And we had two, young children, and by then a mortgage. So I stepped outside for a little while to get some regular consistent income coming into the family, and absolutely loved the work I was doing with a not-for-profit organisation, supporting people to develop their own businesses throughout the Northern Territory. But then Jerry did coax me to come back into the business, and that was, I think, because when I looked at the business originally, it was your normal civil construction demolition type business which didn't really align with my values of doing good for the environment and necessarily helping other people. And he got me to come back in because of all the work he was doing around the circular economy and saving waste from landfill, doing really good for the environment. I started to become really interested in what he was doing. And then the final carrot that I guess he dangled was that you know, he said, well, why don't you also bring some of your knowledge around business mentoring, and we can actually use that and support particularly First Nations businesses in our community that are in our industry to actually help these new starts to, I guess, a hand up, not a handout, but a hand up, and connect in with our human resources for mentoring and connect them into our networks and industry as well.
So it seems like one of your credos is definitely along the environmental lines that you've talked about, but also the fact that you can be sustainable and make a profit at the same time.
Look, I just think it's key. There's, you know, I could hug as many trees as I like, but that's not going to actually make a business profitable. And when your business is profitable, I think it's, or as well as actually paying taxes, everyone, no one really likes to do it, but it does provide access to health and good roads and education and things like that. But it also, having a profitable business allows us to employ more people and also do some initiatives that give back to the environment and give back to our community as well.
You've also engaged a First Nations advisor. Why did you do that?
Oh, yes, Mr. Tony Lee, what an amazing gentleman that he is. Well, we live and work on Larrakia land, and I've known Tony for many years, actually through business mentoring that I did with the not-for-profit organisation that I worked in. And we often, with our demolition projects, come across maybe different finds as, you know, we're digging up earth and ground, and then some of those could actually be historical or Aboriginal finds. So it was really important from that aspect that he wanted to engage with us to help us understand what we were finding, but also to support our Indigenous youth that are working in the business in a mentoring role of his own. And that was very important to us, that there was a senior or traditional owner person that was willing to come on board with us, advise us and support us to work in a really meaningful and mindful way on Larrakia land.
Fantastic. Sounds like a win-win for sure. Now, you sort of alluded to the fact that you had had a pretty hectic time since winning the AgriFutures Rural Award last year. You did a trip with Donna Digby around the territory. Tell me about that.
Oh, that was incredible. Yes, Donna is an amazing woman who is the chair of the NT AgriFutures Rural Women's Award alumni. Big title, but she does big things. She's based in Central Australia, and together we went on a road trip, started first in Darwin, and then I flew down to Alice Springs, and we drove from Alice Springs to Tennant Creek to Katherine and back to Darwin. And along the way, we held some workshops to promote AgriFutures and the Rural Women's Award, because we really wanted to get the message out to heaps more territory women who might have an idea or a project that they're doing and could apply for that award. But it also allowed me to deliver my sustainability workshops, helping businesses, individuals and organisations to develop sustainability initiatives for the places they work in.
Now, Donna had a lot of nice things to say about you, one of which was that you build confidence by breaking down big concepts into practical bite-sized pieces that other business owners can confidently put into practice in their own situations. That sounds like a real gift.
I live by that principle of, what's the KISS principle? Keep it simple, stupid, maybe, but I really feel like if you don't have to completely change your business model, but you can get some initiatives going that are really simple to put in place, get some wins on the board, and even just 1% of a difference that you're making in your business through sustainability over a period of a year can equate to a 38% improvement in outcomes. So I think keeping it simple is really important. Business owners are busy enough. They don't have time to do a lot of different things or bring a lot of different initiatives into their businesses. So keeping it simple, things that make sense to them and their business and actually do make a difference, building that in as just part of what you do as business, I think is really key.
What are some of the things or some of the small changes you've seen businesses make after you've been able to work with them in terms of sustainability?
Yeah, look, sometimes it's just really small things that people think don't make a difference, but it's, again, over time they do. Local business here in Darwin actually completely got rid of their photocopy machine. They do all their documents by digital, like e-docs and emails. So they're not using more paper. They're not using another machine. Another lady who does presentations and events also got rid of all paper in her events so that she uses, a little tablet for speakers to be able to have their notes on, and instead of giving flowers or disposable items as gifts, she gives plants. So they've actually got something to go and plant. And they're just two really, really small examples of what people have been able to do. Larger ones are supporting other businesses to develop new recycling initiatives, such as supporting a local window business to develop, a proposal and encouraging him to put that proposal in for glass recycling in the Northern Territory. So sometimes it's little tiny steps, and sometimes it can be really big impacts as well.
But I guess it's just putting it on people's radar, if nothing else.
Yes, that's right. And if everybody did one or two small changes, those changes actually would equate across the territory as really big impacts.
So these days you live on a rural block, Girraween, outside Darwin, and at different times you've had three generations living together there. Sounds like a beautiful family situation.
Yes. Yeah, it's a bit of a family commune, you know, which has its challenges, but on the whole, it's absolutely fantastic. So we moved here first with our young sons, who are now young adults. The youngest one recently left to go and live and work on the Gold Coast, and the eldest one has actually come back after, having a four-year gap here, travelling the world, working and living in Canada and Germany. He's not living on our block, but he's actually back working in our business, which is delightful. And we also supported my mum and dad to build a small house for themselves on the property, because we've got 21 acres. There's plenty of room for them. And, you know, that's been really great to be able to have them and support them, you know, because we've had a few family challenges over the last year with my mum passing away really unexpectedly. So, you know, we're right here for Dad. He can actually, we have our business head office here as well, so he can wander in and have a chat, and, you know, isn't alone. He's fully supported. And it means, you know, he's comfortable to also head off and travel, because we also mind his dog. So at any time you could come into our office, and it's a dog-friendly office. I could have a cup of my own, and his tucked under my desk, getting lots of pats from everyone else here at NTEX as well.
AgriFutures says that you've really transformed the family business into a shining example of a circular economy, where recycling and reusing have become the core focus of your operations. What is your ultimate personal goal, Eileen?
Oh, I think that's a really good question, and it really links back to the sustainability project. And I guess what was really ironic for me over the last year was that I realised it wasn't sustainable for me as an individual to actually be rolling out that education, and doing roadshows was great, but I've also got a family to run, I've got my dad to support, and I can't be everywhere. So my personal goal was to see how could I take that project and make the impact bigger than what's possible with just me. And that's where the Northern Territory Chamber of Commerce has come on board. And I've worked with them to establish a sustainable business working group that will just have way more impact than what I can to help businesses right across the territory. And it feels like a very personal goal. I'm chair of the committee and we're very new, but it's really exciting to see different stakeholders come on board from different industries and from Northern Territory government as well, and how we can actually roll out some very exciting plans and ideas around sustainability to support territory businesses.
That's a really important point you make, sustainability. You have to apply those principles to ourselves as well.
Yeah, yes, definitely. It's like that oxygen mask on the aeroplane. You've got to put it on first, or you can't help anyone else. So that was the point I'd got to. I thought, this is too big for just me.
Well, wish you all the best with your goals in future. The work that you're doing can only be a positive thing for the planet, so there can't be too many goals more positive than that. All the best for your continued success, Eileen.
Look, thank you very much, Terry. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you today.
This conversation was based on a story in issue 154 of Outback magazine by Kerry Sharp. Again, thank you so much for your time, Eileen, and thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll talk to you in the next episode.